This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Jane Steinberg.
I have to say, in all fairness here, now people are going to question me. My mom's family came from Russia. My wife's family, grandparents, just like my grandparents, came from Russia. But that has nothing to do with it. Nick Redfern, please continue.
Well, so what happened? You had a special branch, this arm of the British police force, an intelligence arm of the British police force, looking secretly into the activities of the Aetherius Society. Now, what happened was that in the wake of all this, when the Aetherius Society was saying, you know, we need to get rid of our nukes, et cetera, et cetera, the special branch agents, as the files show, would sit in the audience at the Aetherius Society lectures and just make notes as to what was being said and then prepare reports for their superior officers and so on. Now, what's particularly intriguing is that consider the time frame, sort of late 50s, early 60s. There was a lot of concern in the UK at that time that if there was a nuclear war between Russia and America, that the UK would inevitably get dragged in and we'd all just get wiped out, you know, just fried and, you know, vaporized, which would have happened, you know. But what's particularly intriguing is that because the British public was so worried about this, in the early 60s, there was what was known as the Aldermaston Walks. Now, Aldermaston, this small village in the south of England, which was close to one of the atomic energy facilities in the UK, they started to create these demonstrations from London to this little village. Literally, at one point, the figures of the people who sort of stood up and said, you know, we need to get rid of our nukes and live alongside the Russians, was in excess of 100,000. That's how many people were demonstrating in relation to these sort of Aldermaston walks, as they called them. And so you had like 100,000 people marching on the atomic energy facilities. Now, what we know, thanks to MI5, which is the British equivalent of the FBI, they found out that these Aldermaston walks, as they called them, had actually been infiltrated by KGP professionals. In other words, people who had been smuggled into the UK from Russia and who were essentially passing themselves off as British citizens, but actually whipping up all the controversy, saying, yes, we need to get rid of our nukes and so on. But they were actually KGB assets. We know that, again, through the Freedom of Information Act. And so what you have is the Aetherius Society actually getting on board with these marches and demonstrating about nuclear weapons, and MI5 realizing that the whole situation was being orchestrated by the Russians to try and cause the British people to turn away from, you know, nuclear weapons. The fact that the Aetherius Society were tied to this as well led to even further surveillance and investigation by special branch on the Aetherius Society. And as I said, it went on for about 6 years.
Did you come upon anything that indicates that there was a sort of related kind of mythological society around the same time called the Vril Society that was remarkably similar, but nobody's ever seemed to find any actual members? Were they connected at all, do you think?
I honestly don't know of any particular connection. Most of the early contactees and these early, you know, groups that were sort of subjected to surveillance, they're sort of cultish type groups. Many of them were watched. I mean, for example, the Heaven's Gate group, the FBI has declassified its files on that. Those files run to about 400 pages. Adamski's file was around about 500. George Van Tassel, one of the early contactees, his FBI file is about 300 pages. Albert Bender, early contactee, who started the whole Men in Black mystery, his FBI file's about 70 pages long. George Hunt Williamson, his file's about 40 pages long.
I wanted to stop there with George Hunt Williamson, because he was a pretty peculiar character too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Now, one of the main reasons why the FBI watched Williamson was because he actually went over to Mexico on a number of occasions and smuggled back into the U.S. ancient Mexican artifacts and things like that. And he got into major problems with that. But most of them were watched because of this ability of the contactee movement to affect the mindset of the population and to push it down this extremist left-wing communist angle. But yeah, a lot of these cultic, you know, cultish groups were clearly watched very, very closely, and I'd be very surprised if most of the groups were watched. I mean, for example, I was able to get parts of my file through the Freedom of Information Act, which actually talked about how I'd written this, my first book called A Covert Agenda, was focused on all the released declassified UFO files from the British Ministry of Defence. There was about 7 or 8 pages of material talking about how I'd written this book and I'd used the government files, and they were, I wouldn't say they were concerned, but they were pointing out that I'd been using official files and spending time at the National Archives and things like this. So, you know, I think to a degree, most people in ufology have been watched at some point or other, not because you're necessarily a threat to national security, but I think for government, anyone who asks a question about government is perceived as a troublesome troublemaker, you know. But that really is what it comes down to. You ask questions about government, then the government will open a file on you to find out why you're asking questions.
Yeah, I think your next one should be called "They Weren't Just Paranoid," because, you know, how did that make you feel, Nick?
Well, I mean, so I've got pretty thick skin, you know. I'm not someone who sort of curls up in the corner shaking and worried that the British Ministry of Defence's intelligence agencies are watching me. I mean, if you're going to look for answers, well, you've got to be prepared for certain things that can happen. It's no good just sort of skitting around the outskirts of these subjects. You know, you've got to dig deep, and if by digging deep it causes a few problems here and there, well, that's part of it. No one said this was going to be easy, you know, to find the answers to all of this. And there's no point just going so far and stopping because you're worried what somebody might say or if somebody's listening on the phone. You know, you've got to get the answers. You know, this is sort of like the equivalent of a investigative journalism. You know, what's the point of stopping halfway through? But I've had a lot of weird stuff over the years, which has made it very clear, you know, that things like phone surveillance and things like this, there's no doubt that's happened, but you have to work through it, you know.
So one of the questions that your book asks is what the connection is between the KGB and the MJ-12 documents. Now, you know, we've had our weekly updater on the After the Paracast. He actually got a copy of some of the MJ-12 documents from a separate source at one time, and he's got a pretty interesting story about it. So, you know, what have you been able to uncover about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole issue of MJ-12, for people who don't know, and I'm sure there's hardly anyone that doesn't know, it's alleged to be this sort of top secret think tank / cabal within the government that sits on the most guarded national security issues surrounding UFOs, like, for example, crashed UFOs, dead aliens, alien autopsies, that kind of thing. And some people believe in the existence of Majestic 12, or MJ-12 as it's known. Other people think, you know, it's bogus, created by UFO researchers. Others think it's created as disinformation to have everybody, you know, chasing around this story when the real story gets hidden. Whatever the truth of the matter is, there's absolutely no doubt that the CIA in the latter part of the 1980s was very concerned about the MJ-12 documents. Now, I have to say, and I have to admit, that the CIA did not have proof that the Russians created the MJ-12 documents, the original ones. But they did suspect that they'd made them. And the reason why was because the CIA learned to their concern about them.
Let's do our break here. We'll continue with that. More to come with Gene Randall And Nick, you're in.
The Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. But soon, you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps. The ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid, mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So we continue about the MJ-12 documents here. And I just want to drop a conventional wisdom as we continue, and that is Rick Doty was partly responsible, or William Moore. But the Russians?
Well, it depends which way you look at it. I mean, people have talked about Moore and Doty, you know, being involved with the MJ-12 documents and, you know, knowledge of it. But the CIA were not going down that path. They were going down like the Russians did it. Now, that's not to say they weren't watching people like Moore and Stan Friedman and Jamie Chandray and people like that. Doesn't mean they weren't watching them. I'm sure they were. But the CIA was definitely not going down the path that, you know, these were fabricated by UFO researchers. Now, what did happen, as I said, just what we said before the break, the CIA learned that there were a number of people in the US working in sort of defense, Department of Defense contractor programs, working on things like the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter 4 or 5 or 10 years before, you know, they were actually released to the public. Now, one of the big concerns the CIA was that a number of these people working on DOD programs like the stealth fighter, it turned out that a number of them had a deep interest in UFOs. Now, in terms of the files where it's got the people's names, they're actually deleted. But it talks about how the CIA was concerned that because these people were working on classified programs, they learned that Soviet assets had approached some of these DOD people working on programs and basically said to them, look, if you give us information, this is the Russians talking now, if you give us information on the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber that the US government's developing now, if you give us information on that, we'll give you highly classified information on what your government knows about UFOs in return. It was like sort of, you give us something, we'll give you something. And so the theory that the CIA had was that if the DOD people working on the stealth fighter and stealth bomber programs would give the Russians certain information, in return, the Russians would give them highly classified material on what the US government really knows about UFOs, like Roswell and so on. And the CIA came to believe that the Russians created the MJ-12 documents, totally bogus, but giving people what they wanted. So in other words, the Russians would get highly classified information on the stealth fighter and the stealth bomber, but in return, the people in the DOD who were smuggling this material out, in return, all they would get would be bogus MJ-12 documents from KGB disinformation artists. You know, I don't know if that's true, but what I do know for sure is that that is the theory that the Americans had, namely that the Russians had created those documents. It's kind of like a dangling carrot. You know, you give us something, we'll give you something. The Russians would get something genuine, and the people in the US, the people working on these programs, would just get sort of sci-fi style fake documents, which is an interesting theory, you know.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good theory. It's pretty interesting, one I'd never really considered before, although, you know, I can't imagine how anyone actually working on one of those highly classified projects like the stealth fighter would take that seriously.
The big concern of the CIA was that that's what could happen. In the same time frame that the MJ-12 document surfaced, that's when the CIA started to wonder, are these documents actually really dangling carrots designed to, you know, get someone on the inside in the US to feed us something? Now, as I said, it was a theory on their part. As theories go as to who created the MJ-12 documents, I mean, it's not a bad one. It actually has a lot of common sense attached to it, really.
Yeah, got to agree with that for sure. Definitely. That's a good one, Nick. I had no idea, really, there was that sort of a direct connection back and forth. It's really interesting to hear that how those people had been approached by actually the Russians with that type of an offer. Very interesting. It makes you wonder if they really do have something that we don't have. Have you run across anything like that? Like, well, they're, you know, the Russians do have their own UFO program. They do take it seriously.
I think, you know, just like us in the UK and the French and numerous other countries, Brazil, particularly in the 50s and 60s, you know, many countries have opened UFO programs because at various times, you know, they've all experienced strange things in their airspace. So it's important for me to note, I don't doubt at all that there is a genuine UFO phenomenon. And the reason why, or one of the reasons, my dad was a radar mechanic in the British Royal Air Force and was involved in several UFO incidents involving things performing all sorts of almost impossible maneuvers. So there's no doubt in my mind there's a real phenomenon, but the thrust of the book is how that real phenomenon has been used as a means and an end to create fear. I mean, that was one of the whole concerns of the CIA's Robertson panel in the 50s. They were less concerned about whether or not UFOs were real. They were far more concerned about how the Russians could flood emergency communication channels in the US by spreading stories of alien invasions and have so many people in states of hysteria that potentially the Russians could launch a sneak attack. You know, whether or not that would actually have happened is kind of irrelevant, but that is the fear that the Robertson panel created by the CIA. That's what they were worried about, that, you know, hysteria would sort of provoke a situation like a sneak attack.
Well, that's really interesting because I've always kind of wondered, you know, why would the Robertson panel do that? You know, go so far as to recommend, you know, discrediting our own pilots. But when you think about it in the terms of this backdrop of the sort of Cold War spy versus spy stuff, yeah, you know, it makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, another example, I used the Freedom Information Act to get material from Australia as well. And the Australian Intelligence Service, they were up to their neck in the 50s through the 70s in relation to keeping watch and monitoring some of the Australian UFO researchers and groups. A number of them, these people, watched very, very closely. One was a man named Stan Sears, who started one of the early Australian UFO groups. I was able to get his Australian surveillance file, and he talks all about his history and his work and how many members, you know, came along for the Sunday afternoon meetings. And actually, you know, these guys were sitting in the audience, you know, just making notes. And some really strange stuff. I mean, anyone who had any kind of connection at that time in Australia who was sort of involved in UFOs and had sort of an alternative lifestyle, you know, with like connections to the Russians, or they were vegetarians.
Yeah, those vegetarians are really, you know, they're strange.
I mean, there's also, in one of the files.
More to come with Gene, Randall, and Nick. You're in.
The
listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
We've got another mayor speaking out against the upcoming ICE raids. USA's Rick Vincent has more.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot says city officials there will not help with the ICE immigration raids, she tells CNN.
I think the thing that I am obligated to do is to speak our values. Our values are not about terrorizing. It's not about demonizing individuals who are productive members of our community.
Other mayors have made similar comments.
Violent clashes broke out after several thousand people marched in Hong Kong against traders from mainland China in what is fast becoming a summer of unrest in that territory. After issuing a warning, police moved to disperse the crowd of mostly young protesters who say peaceful demonstrations have failed to bring about any change. Police used pepper spray and batons. In panic scenes, fleeing protesters scrambled over each other, some falling to the ground. This is USA Radio News.
Money! 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 Money. You gotta have it. When you need it, what do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you now that a strange phenomenon occurred on our previous segment of this episode, where Nick Redfern got caught in a loop.
In a loop. That's what I did. That's what I do.
It would seem to me that, for the most part, people really interested in UFOs were thought of as a small minority, although obviously the percentages are higher than that. The real UFO field of people, hardcore people interested in the subject, in the tens of thousands maybe, why would they be so important that the Russians would care?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, there's 4, 5, 10,000 or whatever alone, they aren't necessarily a threat, because ufology, we tend to speak to each other. You know, it's like speaking to the converted, so to speak, you know, unless the mainstream media picks things up like they did, you know, a couple of years ago with the government's secret UFO program. That doesn't happen very often. For the most part, we talk to each other. But it's like with George Adamski. George Adamski developed a following of like 100,000, you know, in relation to his books. So, you know, he himself wasn't necessarily the threat. It was what was provoked by his statements and writing his books. So I think 10,000 people in ufology, no, they're not going to cause a threat to national security. But if that 10,000 can provoke another 100,000 to follow them, then that's when it becomes troublesome from the perspective of government agencies. Like with the Australian stuff I mentioned before the break, back then, and maybe even now, there was this deep distrust of anyone whose life was a little bit not necessarily just like mom and dad, you know, and the pet dog and the two kids, you know, and the white picket fence. They were looking at ufologists who, as I said, you know, were vegetarians who ran swinging clubs, and they were just looking at these people as someone who was living a lifestyle that, you know, the guys in government just did not approve of. And the fact that they were also bringing communism into it as well, it really sort of, you know, raised the blood pressures of people in government.
This takes McCarthyism to like a whole new level. I mean, you know, people into UFOs, that, you know, this sort of subculture, but the ones who are vegetarians and into swinging too, they'd be a real interesting get together with the black hats and the suits and you know, this is it's amazing. How do you dig this stuff up, Nick?
Well, I'll tell you one of the interesting ways of going about this. You know, if you apply for UFO material, you'll get a lot of material from like the FBI, the CIA, documents on UFOs. But what I did with this book was not to apply for files on UFOs, but the people in the subject. And like I said, the files that I got from Australia, which was about 150 pages, was not detailing UFO events or incidents. It was actually the files on the people in ufology. The people in ufology is sort of more the theme of this book. You know, it's not about alien encounters. It's about how people were used and manipulated by the Russians, and intelligence agencies were concerned with what these people were doing. So that's how I got a lot of the material, was not by actually getting data on UFO events, but looking into the lives of these people who the intelligence agencies thought were working for the Russians and were trying to spread vegetarianism and how good it would be, you know, to go swinging on a Saturday night or whatever. You know, those stories, in a strange way, are integral to this UFO story in the book.
Nick, I thought it was politicians who go swinging on a Saturday night, at least before we have these sexually transmitted diseases.
But it does demonstrate how there is this angle of, if you're not quite what, you know, officialdom sees as normal, you're a threat in some ways, whether a minor threat or something more, but you're a threat, you know, and you shouldn't be doing this or you shouldn't be doing that. Well, I mean, if I'd gone through life like that, don't do this and don't do that, I would never have done nothing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, this is a really interesting angle that you've taken, and especially with relevance to ufology as a cultural phenomena, which guests like Dr. Paul Kingsbury, who we've had on before, I mean, this would be right up his alley. So, you know, I hope he's listening and grabs a hold of this book, too. It leads right into this question from our forum by Marduk, and this is what you were just saying is a really good tip. Don't necessarily look at the phenomena itself. Look at the people involved. Have you got any other tips and tricks? And how is it, he asked, that you managed to produce so many books?
Well, I mean, in terms of, you know, getting information, I mean, with the book, I did a lot of research, like with the, for example, with the Australian stuff, I got a lot of early Australian, like, newsletters and magazines on UFOs and learned some of the early people who were involved, like Stan Sears. And so then I applied for information that might be held by Australian security services on people like Stan Sears. And sure enough, there was a file on him. There was another one, Colin Norris, who was actually active up until about 15, 20 years ago. And I got his part of his file. And they actually talked about how, in his file, as to how there were some concerns because he lectured at like something called like the Young Socialist Society of Australia or something like that. So, you know, you got that kind of angle. And then you just dig further. You know, it's just a case of digging further. But in terms of, was the other part, how do I do what I do? Was that it?
Right, yeah, you're just so prolific. You're like the Stephen King of paranormal.
Well, this kind of ties in what we said off air before we started the show. I mean, to give you an idea of how I do what I do, I very much sort of keep things to like a 9-to-5 situation. Now, you know, a lot of people still work 9-to-5. Now, what I do, I work 9-to-5, Monday to Friday, writing books. Now, I sort of get up about 7, have breakfast, I, sort of answer Facebook and things like that and watch a few stupid videos of talking dogs or whatever, Anyway, I just have a regular start to the day. But 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, I write the books. I just open Word and I just start cranking it out in the book.
Discipline. So how do you manage day after day, year after year, to do this?
Well, no,
because
I mean,
all the distractions.
Like, I mean, I'll explain how I do it. I work 9 to, like a lot of people, like millions of people around the world, I work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and I write in that 9 to 5 period, Monday to Friday, the articles I'm working on or the books I'm working on.
I understand, but you're working at home. You're working at home with your laptop.
But just let me finish.
Sure.
And what I do, when 5 o'clock comes around, I put the laptop in sleep mode, and I do not touch that laptop until 9 o'clock the next morning. Now, on Friday afternoons, I finish at 4, and what I do is, again, I finish where I am at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, put the laptop in sleep mode. I do not touch that laptop until 9 o'clock Monday morning. So that's Friday afternoon to Monday morning. For me, evenings and weekends are for having a good, fun time, whether it's like taking a girlfriend out, going out with a bunch of friends to watch a soccer game, go and see a band or whatever. And I totally switch off every afternoon through to the next day. And I totally and I don't do any work for after 4 o'clock Friday afternoon till 9 o'clock Monday morning. And for me, that allows me to have, a fun weekend and fun nights and having a good time, and then I get back to it in the week. And that's but the important thing is I do work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, and I do get my head down, but it's like I work hard and I party hard. You know what I mean?
We got more to come with Nick and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part, Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Well, I was interested in, as you were talking about your work routine, you set it up as a normal job. You go to work by going wherever you have your notebook installed. You do your work. Didn't ask you to take a lunch break or not. It doesn't matter. The key here is, obviously, if you're in office, there's that pressure. At home, the discipline of saying, 9 to 5, I'm going to sit down there, I'm going to do work, I'm not going to be distracted, I'm going to get my work done, and then to celebrate after 5 o'clock, I can, you know, have a nice dinner, whatever. And that, I think, you have to be commended for, because I've written a number of books myself. And to get myself in the mindset to sit there and crank it out like I did with computer books, I really, really had to psych myself to get myself in that mood.
Well, you know, when I say I do it like a job, 9 to 5, I wouldn't want people to think it's just a job, because it isn't. You know, if I didn't have that passion and energy and excitement and enthusiasm for it all, I wouldn't be doing it anymore. You know, I still have that enthusiasm for the subject that I did when I was like a kid, you know, when I first got into it. I've never lost that enthusiasm. I keep, like, job hours, but I don't consider it as just a job, you know, like a bland thing I've got to do or whatever to pay for the electric bill. You know, if I ever got to that stage, I'd walk away from it. You know, the way I look at it is, if you're working from home, you're self-employed, and you don't get down and do the work, inevitably you fall behind and deadlines sort of screw up and everything else. And so in that sense, I learned pretty quickly, if you're going to work from home and you work self-employed, you have to be disciplined. But that means discipline when you're working, and then afterwards, do whatever you want, you know, and just switch off. And I'm good at working hard, and I'm good at switching off hard as well, you know. So.
Well, you would have to be, I would think, to be able to keep up with the kind of creative output that you've got. One of the things I really love about your books, Nick, and you know, I've some of the earliest ones I got in the field were from you, and I would always enjoy them because they always seem fresh and they always seem interesting, and they're not 900 pages. You know, you can get through them and it leaves you with something to think about. Like, sure, there's skeptics out there that are going to say this and that, but you know what? They always leave you with something to think about. I really like them, so I'm looking forward to this one too.
Well, thanks. I mean, I try and, with every book, come up with something new. If you go looking, there is actually a lot of material that is new, and data and information. Sometimes you just have to dig deep for it, whether it's UFOs or it's like my other interests, you know, Bigfoot and cryptozoology. You just have to go digging.
If you don't mind, how did you get your break to get in? Because, you know, I imagine there's other people that try writing, but how did you get your in? Like, where did you get your first one really published and get off to the races, and how did that go for you?
Oh, well, that sort of began when I was about 18. I wasn't actually the best student at school. I was kind of, you remember Sean Penn's character in Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Oh, yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
That was kind of me. I was not a great student, you know. Me and my friend's school was just for messing around, you know. And I just wasn't particularly good at school, you know. College, university, it was just a waste of time for me. I didn't get it. But it was just sort of like a act of fate, I suppose. The little town that I was living in at the time, a company was setting up a magazine in the area, kind of like a What's On magazine, you know, like local celebrities and bands playing and different things like that. I left school. I'm like, well, what the hell am I going to do now? I saw this and I thought, well, you know, that probably kind of sounds like a cool job, you know, working on an entertainment magazine. And I was straight out of school and they said, well, you know, if you were willing to learn and try, we'll give you a chance. And admittedly, before that, you know, I did write little stories as a kid. I'm sure, if I look back now, if they even existed anymore, which I'm sure they don't, but I'm sure they were awful, you know, but I did write little stories here and there. And I always loved to read as well. I wasn't a great student, but I did love to read books. And so I worked for this magazine called Zero about 18 months, and I did a lot of reviews of, like, bands and local celebrities, that kind of thing. And I did that for a few years. That dried up for a while. I had about 3 years of just regular jobs, working in a gas station, forklift driver, van driver, truck driver, all sorts of different things. I got to about 26 and I thought, well, you know, I'd really like to try and make it as a writer. And I basically said, I'm going to try and write a book. I've got about enough money to last for about 6 months. And if I can make it in that 6 month period and sell a book, I'll try and keep doing it. And if I can't do it, I'll go back to driving forklifts. And what happened was that I wrote one book and a synopsis for a second, and sent it to various publishers. And amazingly enough, Simon & Schuster in London, England, said, we really like this. We like your writing style. And we would like to give you a two-book deal. They sold about 26, something like that.
Nice. That's like getting a record deal for a musician.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, that's how it was, you know. And I mean, I don't consider it a job. It's a passion. But if you're going to turn your passion into a career, you know, you have to be, you know, you have to have your head on your shoulders and know what you're doing. And, you know, so I have an agent to handle all my books and also, you know, the legal issues of contracts and all that kind of thing. You know, I make sure that's all taken care of. It's a passion, but it's a job as well. It's a profession, and you need to, you know, have somebody handling all your papers for you, your legal documents. And, you know, I mean, I'm somebody who's like a laid-back guy, but when it comes to work, you have to sort of be on top of things, you know.
Well, it sounds like you say this is something that you were doing from the time you were actually a child because you enjoyed it, and it just grew into your lifelong profession.
Well, yeah, and I mean, for me, it's kind of like being in a band, you know, which I've done also. I mean, music's my other big interest. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you see your favorite band and they're just going through the motions on stage. You know, you can see they're clearly bored stiff, you know what I mean? They're just not interested anymore. If I ever got to that stage, I really would quit and do something else, you know, but thankfully, like I said, I'm still fired up by what I do. But you need to sort of, if you're going to do this, you have to be sort of, you know, straight ahead with it. You need to do the work, to keep to your time frames, to make sure, you know, you've got work coming in 6 months or a year later down the line, you know, where it's kind of like the equivalent of, you know, working as a roofer or plumber or whatever. You know, if you're self-employed, you have to do what you have to do to keep your head up.
It's a livelihood, and it's a skill.
Well, it is a livelihood, but it's a livelihood because it's something I really enjoy. I genuinely would not want people, I would hate it if people thought I just did it because for money or for the job. I don't, you know. I mean, I get up every day thinking, wow, you know, what's the latest thing? You know, as long as I have that enthusiasm and that kind of sense of, wow, you know, this is a new case to look into. As long as I still have that, which I still do, you know, it doesn't feel like just some, like a job. It doesn't feel like, you know, like I'm just doing this to build, you know.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And you're, that's what makes you such a great guest, too, because you always come across as being genuinely interested and enthusiastic about your work, which is really cool.
I do realize that. And I think as long as you can get the information out to people and present them with new material, new data, and bring something new, I think that's important. You know, you don't want to just sort of go over old ground. I mean, people often say to me, why don't you write a book on like remote viewing? Somebody actually the other day said, why don't you write a book on remote viewing? And I said, well, there's not really much I could write about that hasn't been said about remote viewing, you know. So what's the point of me doing it? Yeah, I could probably get a book deal, but I'd feel bad about it because I would just be paraphrasing 10 earlier books or something, you know what I mean? So
basically what you're saying here is you've got to have some material, you have to have interest in the subject. You don't just write to write. And that's a very important thing.
I can never say there aren't people out there who just do it for the money. You know, I would hope there aren't, and I would hope they aren't well-known people, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if there are some people who just sort of, you know, just almost, you know, totally unemotionally just do it because, you know, it pays the electric bill or the, you know, the TV bill or whatever.
I tell you, God, these days things are so expensive, you have to write a lot of books to do that. Nick Redfern, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes,
Take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.